Welcome to the Between Dreams podcast. My name is Chris Ruggiero. I'm the host. This show is all about bringing you creative inspiration so that you're motivated, inspired, and have the tools to get out there and make something happen. We've all got something we've been thinking about, we want to do, and we keep coming up with excuses. This show is giving you the tools to stop making those excuses and get out there and make it happen. It's not coming from me. I'm not just making stuff up, though. No, I'm going out and finding the most inspiring people that I can find, creative performers, entertainers, writers, travelers, and I'm bringing their stories to you. This week is no exception. We have as our guest, Eric Buss. Now, he's, if you had to really refine his title, I would say it's a magician, but he's so much more. He's an inventor, and he incorporates music into his act, and it's not just the same old magic stuff that you might be expecting when you hear comedy magician. He creates amazing routines. He's been seen on TV shows and is just a really awesome character and performer. I recently caught up with him as we were both at the Scott Neary's Booby Trap show in Hollywood. We were both performing a couple weeks ago, and I made him show up early, and we found a closet, as he called it, to record this episode in. So you'll hear stuff going on in the background, and it's like a real showbiz experience. You guys are seeing behind the scenes, hearing behind the scenes of a real showbiz experience. So thank you guys so much for listening. And if you have any questions, I would love to hear what you are working on. We just set up our brand new voicemail box. So throughout the thing, if you are hear anything that you think is intriguing, or you want to ask a question, or you're inspired to maybe get started on your project that you've been wanting to do, but you don't quite know what the starting point is, or something, I don't know. You have some question or something you want to tell me, you can call. You can call into the show. Now, no one's going to answer the phone, but you can call. You can leave a voicemail, and no pressure. You're not going to call in live ever. We're not going to put you on the radio, and you won't have to worry about it. But if you want to leave a message, you can call. The number is 213-373-1364. That number you can call. I'll repeat it here in a second, and you can leave a voicemail, and you can ask me a question, and or if you want to text in a question, you can do that. Again, that number is 213-373-1364. We'll answer your questions. We're going to have way more things going on. We got the YouTube channel up. Just search my name on YouTube. That's Chris Ruggiero. You can go to the website, chrisruggiero.com/podcast, to listen to these things. And I'm excited to bring this story to you. It's a quick one, so it'll be awesome. And that's it for now. And make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts, if that's on the podcast app or on Stitcher or Google Play Music or Spotify, iTunes. Leave a comment, rating, review. You know what to do. Just keep listening. Tell a friend. You know, you've listened to podcasts before. You understand what this is all about. All right, here we go. Let's get into the chat with Eric Buss.
My name is Eric Buss, and I'm a professional show and teller. I've been a comedy magician for 20-something years, and it definitely beats working for a living.
So if you guys hear crazy things as listeners at home, we are upstairs in a kind of weird room at Booby Trap, which is a variety show.
Closet,
in
I believe, is what this is called. This is a closet. We're in the podcast closet.
The you guys listening will know there has been podcasts recorded in bathrooms, a few in cars, some outside, I think. So they're ready for whatever. So let's give a little bit of a background, because I feel like you have been around, as you said, for a handful of years.
A few, yep.
And so there's people who are listening who want to get started, and maybe they're thinking, oh, well, I want to do this, but I don't know. How was that the decision that you made to say, yeah, I'm going to do this?
Well, it's very different now than it was when I started, but I got serious in magic when I was 16. I started working at an Italian restaurant, real small place near my high school, where it was all high school kids working there. It was very fun and not work at all. One of those kids was a year older than me, and he was already doing magic, kind of semi-professionally, doing close-up and walk-around. So he would show me a bunch of tricks on our breaks, and I was already into it on my own. But one thing he kind of taught me, his name is Adrian Van Vactor, too. He's still in the business. He does the ministry side of magic now, but we were very good friends. And he kind of taught me or showed me, proved to me, that you could be a middle-class magician. You didn't have to be David Copperfield. And when I started, I thought David Copperfield was the only professional magician on the planet. Yeah. I thought, how can anyone make a living at that except for him? He's a superstar.
Yeah.
So Adrian kind of showed me, like, no, you can do birthday party shows on the weekend. You can do magic at restaurants and get paid. And so it was kind of him that really refueled a childhood passion. He also told me about the magic shop in Tucson, Arizona, where I grew up, and it was Williams Magic. It was a very good magic shop with professional stuff, amateur stuff, a stage, you know, treats, cookies, drinks, and a very, very friendly husband and wife team that ran the place. So all these things kind of happened within the, you know, a few months of working at this restaurant. And I think right away when I got serious about it, I started thinking this is what I wanted to do when I grew up. I still went to college, but I was a theater major to be an actor, mostly to help my magic, but I was also into acting as well. But I had odd jobs when I was a teenager in early 20s, but none of them were career based, and none of them I never thought, you know, I want to do something else other than magic. So when I finished college, when I was 22, 23, something, I moved to LA. I starved for a whole long time, but I
How
moved
long?
To LA. Well, I had a girlfriend with a job, so I could go to her house and eat. I'm married now, but I'd still be starving occasionally. It didn't just end, but the cool thing was, is before I moved to LA, like a year before I moved to LA, I did a competition in Belgium, and it was actually a variety competition. Uh-huh. I had never performed against acrobats and other jugglers and other types of disciplines. And when I did that competition, I booked a gig in Germany for 2 months a year later. Well, fast forward, I moved to LA, and I had a gig in Germany coming up right after I moved to LA. So I had 3 months in LA. Act like a superstar, you know, full-time magician. And I was broke, but I still could act cool. And then I went to Germany for 2 months to do this gig. So I still felt really cool, came home with some money. So I wasn't starving right away. I think it was probably after being here for 7-8 months where, you know, the Germany thing was done. I had paid my rent and now on to the next thing. And that's when it really started, you know, getting difficult. And I had to decide between buying milk or spray paint to fix a prop. I could not buy both. And I think I went with spray paint, if I remember correctly. So no, I mean, the starving was off and on. I had successes early on and I had a whole lot of failures, but moving to LA was one of the best things for the Magic Castle, for just meeting. I mean, I wish Booby Trap was around in 98 when I moved here. There were things like this, but not nearly as good as this. So, yeah, you move here and then you just start swimming and trying to do what you want to do. You find yourself, you find your group. That's kind of how it all went down.
That's funny how you said, like, when you first got here, you had that thing. That was kind of the same with, I just got here recently, 2 years
how
ago.
How long have you, 2 years?
Yeah, about 2 years. And, like, I got here right away and then, like, got, like, a couple really good things, like long-standing gigs, like a regular type gig, a couple of those. And I got here, I was like, oh, this is easy. And it was like, it seems like that always happens, like, because you maybe, and that might be just because you come and you're like, yeah, you're like innocently like enthusiastic.
Yep.
And then it's like, oh, that is easy. And then maybe, like, I don't know what it is, just you get like worn down by sitting in your car all day or something. And then it's like this like hard thing. For me, it was like, oh, I was like, oh, wait, that's not going to just keep happening unless I like really try hard to make it happen.
Right.
And that's an interesting thing. And I hear so many people that, and I know of so many people that come out and they don't survive that like first little hard part, that little valley of just it being difficult and they have to move back home or do whatever. So
you have to love that part. You have to love the down part, the struggling. Yeah. Or maybe not love it, but be obsessed enough about the good parts that you stick around through the bad parts.
You initially said when you first started your story, how when you came out here and made the decision to, or before you came out here, just to make the decision to perform and stuff, and you started off with it's a lot different now. How do you think it's different now? Like the whole, you know,
YouTube, just technology in general, and the timing is different. When I was 16 in 1991, 1995, I competed in a magic competition as a 20-year-old and ended up winning that contest. And that got me a bunch of magic conventions elsewhere in the country and a few even, you know, elsewhere in the world. That was kind of my beginning. And that was the beginning for a lot of guys that I know who had an original 8 minutes of material. They'd do some competitions, they'd be seen by some other magicians who book things, and then they'd start booking things that way. Yeah. It wasn't the only way to break into the business, but as a young magician especially, I started with Doves. I started as a stage magician. That was one of the best ways to break into the business with a Dove act, because magicians know Dove acts and book Dove acts and like Dove acts. So that's kind of how I got started. Again, that even back then, it wasn't the only way to break into the business, but it seemed like a very logical path. Do a few competitions, get known, do a few conventions, get known, and then you can start doing the real gigs and the good money and the, you know, the international gigs and TV and blah, blah, blah. And it just kind of branches out. These days, magic contests are nothing. They're not important. They are behind in the times. Magic conventions are behind in the times, except for a very few hipper ones.
Yeah.
YouTube, there are YouTube stars who have never stepped foot on stage, and good for them. I'm not knocking them, but it's just a different ballgame. So I think if you were to start off as a kid right now and want to be a stage magician or a stage juggler or a stage acrobat or anything, I can't speak too much for acrobats. I don't know the circus world, but a stage performer, I think it would be a similar road to what I took. But again, YouTube has changed everything because now you can have your promo video there. I mean, I was sending out VHS tapes and I would have to save my $12 to send it to France or, you know, something like that. So it's much easier in that respect. It could be more difficult because there's more competition. There's more platforms for people. I'm 43 now, but I'm already acting like I'm 65, going, I'm shaking the fist if you can't see it. Get off my lawn.
But you have this, you know, on your actual show, especially, you have a thing where you are utilizing this new technology, especially and innovating things. You're not doing, I mean, there's plenty of people who are still living in that time yes, and still doing that same act.
Thank you. And yes. Well, it's funny you say that because I've always wanted to be an original performer and I pride myself in doing original material on stage. But when I am sitting at my computer, I'm in 1995 not knowing how to work my MacBook Pro, you know, regretting buying something that was way too much for me and calling friends to edit my video for me. And hey, how do I download this song? You know, so I'm still kind of a technophobe to a point. But that I do use a little bit of technology on stage. The looper is kind of new, and that was a huge learning curve. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go to my website. It's on my video. But I'm using an audio looper. But that passion was more coming from me wanting to be a rap star, beatboxer, and, you know, rock star.
Yeah.
Than it was me going, ooh, technology. I'm going to see what's out there, what's new in the music world, because that's not how I came up with it.
Yeah,
I needed that thing to accomplish what I wanted to accomplish. But so I'm stuck right in the middle. I have older friends that bitch about, you know, the new kids, and I'm probably one of those new kids to them. I have much younger friends that bitch about the old folks, and I'm one of them. And I wasn't always in the middle, or maybe I'm not in the middle because there's a whole group of us that are in our early 40s. Yeah. And of course, there are gigs for everyone from age, you know, 5 to all the way up. So, but yes, I'm kind of stuck in the middle. I missed the Johnny Carson. I definitely missed vaudeville. I missed Johnny Carson and the comedy club boom of the 80s. And now I'm too young to really, you know YouTube and become a YouTube celebrity. I don't want to do that at all, but I'm kind of too young to do that even if I wanted to. So yeah, I'm right in the middle, but I'm super happy doing that because, like I said, I do stage magic, and there are still stages all over the world, and they have sound systems, and that's all I need is yeah. a stage, a sound system, and an audience, and that's I can do a show. So there are still plenty of those left, and that's kind of what I'm going to do until I'm dead.
If you had so. This interesting thing of like, oh yeah, they have a sound system and that's good. If you had just the ultimate freedom to create your own room, say you got like your own show and you could, they said, whatever you need, you can build your own stage and sound system and lights.
Plywood and a boombox is all I need.
What would you keep it simple and you make it more, you know, because some people would be like, well, I wanted a light show and lasers and...
I would not keep it simple, but I would keep it simple in regards to what you're talking about. I would not start thinking lasers and smoke machines and DMX, whatever that is, and fancy lighting. I would be thinking cool kinetic sculptures around the room, like mm-hmm. a Rube Goldberg machine. My dream would be to have kind of a Rube Goldberg machine start, and it goes all throughout the theater. And by the time it ends, it's on stage and like a bowling ball falls in a bucket and that opens the curtain. Something like that. And people have used Rube Goldberg stuff before. I have used it before. Other people have used it before. But if I had my own theater, it would be a giant contraption that happens at the top of the show. There would be kind of science type games in the lobby. There would be that kind of stuff. The stage and the lighting itself would be kind of basic.
Yeah.
But yes, I would probably go nuts, but in a different way than most people would go nuts.
Yeah.
Again, cool. There'd have to be one of my friends would have to go, Eric, you need this lighting. And I'd go, whatever. Okay, put it in and tell me how to do it. But as soon as it's a contraption with mechanics, I'm going to dive in head first and spend thousands of dollars and hours building something ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's how I roll.
And that's an interesting. You know, how you kind of go to that where you didn't say you're going to hire somebody to build this. You're going to spend the hours and hours doing it yourself.
It would be me. Yes, yes. I would probably have some friends helping, but no, it would be me.
Where does that come from in wanting to build the stuff yourself? And I know you do a lot, you know, it's like, you know, fiddling with stuff and tinkering with your own gear and stuff and kind of creating your own stuff. Where does that come from instead of... finding somebody else to
my dad was an amateur carpenter and so he taught me power tools and tinkering when I was young. It's definitely a huge part of where it comes from. But also when you create original material, you have to know it because you're the only one who owns it. And you can have somebody build all your own stuff, but I mean, part of the fun for me is building it. And I don't weld. I don't do electronics. So there's a lot of stuff that's way over my head. But if it's a little contraption or a little gimmick that's going to help me accomplish A, B, and C on stage, I will build it until it works. And that is pretty much like 49% of the fun for me.
Yeah.
51% is performing it. But it doesn't win by much because I'm very happy in my garage by myself with music, creating just junk. And 9 times out of 10, it is junk. And then 1 out of 10, I go, ooh, this will work. So my dad taught me some stuff when I was a kid, but I do also think it was just necessity. I was creating ideas of things that didn't exist.
Yeah.
And when I moved to LA, I had lots of ideas in my head. I had very little money. So I can't pay somebody to build it, but I can build it using crap that I can find. Or just save up my money and buy this, you know. So I had to be able to put a sign on this table, or put a spring in this mechanism, or you know, build this out of rubber bands and zip ties. That's kind of what I had to do. So I think my passion for that and my necessity met, and I realized how much fun it was. And then I've just done that ever since.
Yeah,
I'm doing something tonight in the show where I've been obsessing about a prop for 2 weeks now. Which isn't a long time, but over Christmas, I was obsessing with this prop. And part of it is built by somebody else, and part of it is built by me. And I had to kind of marry them together and make the whole routine work. We'll see how it goes tonight, but I'm hopeful. So, yeah, I'm not against having other people build things for me if they are better at doing that than I am. But I'm going to start and do as much as I can on my own.
But that's such a cool thing in... the necessity of, you know, do it yourself, of, well, I just had to do this. And mm-hmm. and if you had unlimited resources, that might put a mute on creativity and imagination of what's, you know, because you're just like, oh, I saw this. Can some, you know, and you'd be duplicating what you've seen other people do and having other people create it or something. So I think that's a really cool
thing. And I've always kind of thought, like, if I won $100 million in the lottery, it would destroy my career.
Yeah.
How can I motivate to go work on a cruise ship or be, I mean, yeah, I enjoy my garage time, I'll face it, but I'm, how can I motivate to do that kind of stuff if I have $100 million in the bank?
Right.
So I think it really would ruin my career. It might make my life better or more interesting, but it would ruin my career. And yeah, I'd have the urge to call somebody and say, hey, build this.
Yeah.
Hurry up. I have lots of money for you.
Yeah.
And then go and pick it up and it'd be like Christmas. Woo.
Yeah.
So yeah, it would ruin it. And unlimited resources, same thing. But unlimited resources for me, I do think would mean just bigger contraptions, but I would still be there creating some of them at least.
Yeah.
Or I could have people weld for me, you know, I don't weld, so
yeah.
Who knows?
I think that's a cool thing for especially, you know, young people that might be listening that see you or somebody up on stage, like, oh, well, sure, I'd be able to do that if I was already a professional and out performing. Right. But like what allowed you to start doing that and continually allows you to do that is that you are using the resources that are available.
Yep.
And I think that's a really valuable thing for somebody watching. They're gonna, you know, there's a benefit in wherever you are right now of having to do that.
And I think along those same lines, the young magicians that start off either doing walk around in a restaurant, which I did a little bit of in college, or like I said, back in the 90s, you'd put together an 8-minute stage act, which today gigs need more than 8 minutes. Corporate events need more. Cruise ships need more. There's no Vegas variety anymore. So when I say that, it's of course based on what I know from when I was a kid. But my point is, magicians that wanted to do a stage act had to assemble things together. They had to build their own coat hanger holder for this ball that they're going to produce. They had to do this. They had to do that. And I think it really does force a young magician, even without building experience, to go down that road. And I think when a magician buys a prop, whether it's $30 or $1,500 or $10,000, they might have to adjust some things. They might have to duct tape something or whatever, but it's just different than creating something from scratch when you're a 16-year-old or 20-year-old or whatever. So that's kind of, I think it's more, rewarding if you kind of start off that way and you learn everything about it.
On the other side of that, more so than the building stuff, since my world is more juggling where you do just buy the
props. You don't build,
and then you learn how to manipulate them. But kind of in a similar mindset of that, like, forced creation is like the gigs that you have to do. And that's relevant all around. And I think about that so often of when I was younger and like performing in a backyard while there was like kids running around doing cannonballs into the pool, and they're like, I don't know, just do, you know what to do, just be the juggler and entertain them. I'm like, they're like, you know, dunking each other in the pool, and I'm trying to do this like thing.
Yep.
But those like lessons learned of like, oh, this isn't gonna work how I want it to, so I'm gonna need to adapt what I'm doing and make people try, like, figure out a way to get people to care about what I'm doing because like they're paying me money and that's what my job is. So again, to be I think the lessons there are obviously clear, but it's like wherever people are, it's like I have such a tendency to see somebody that's up here, I see them on TV or on a show or something, I was like, oh yeah, that's easy for them, they're here. But it's like, what got them there is like probably where I am right now and like learning that and figuring that out. And
so, I'll add, I have done a lot of TV. It looks glamorous, but you get there and it's always just chaos.
Yeah, totally. And,
it doesn't get much easier. It gets easier, I guess, with your own attitude, but the process is always the same. It's always hurry up and wait. It's this. Yeah, it's always much more glamorous.
Yeah.
And I'm just now at 43 realizing that. And I still will fall back into that habit of seeing somebody going, oh, man, look how perfect that is. And there, if I could. And then I stop myself and I'm like, Eric, you have done that TV show and it went well for you, or it didn't go well or whatever. But you did try.
Yeah.
And so, and they're having the same chaos that you had, and you're working on something different. So I always have to kind of pull myself back and, you know, snap out of it and go, oh, yeah, okay. Back to reality.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I promised that we would keep this a tight one for all of us. We have a show to do.
Oh, yeah, do we? Booby Trap.
And I think there's some cool stuff in there, and maybe we will save some more of the dirt and the stories for round two next time.
I got lots of dirt.
When we can just go off the deep end with it.
Done.
Count me in. Kept it pretty positive.
I kept my language clean tonight, too. That's very unlike me.
So why don't we keep the ball rolling here on the positivity. And for the new year, this is coming out. It's right at the new year as we're recording this. And yes, as you guys are listening,
it'll still
be towards the new year, at least. Some people, maybe they had some New Year's resolutions, whether they're performers or maybe they're just regular, people too. They've been thinking about something, or they said, oh, this year I'm going to do this. And then when the time comes, they hit that like valley or something that we were talking about. What kind of a little word of wisdom do you have for them to make it
through? One of the best things my dad ever told me, which was not good at the time, but he told me I was the most impatient person he had ever known. I was 10 when he told me this. It was absolutely true because I was a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, I never lost that impatientness. When I come up with a new idea and I kind of think about it and I go, yeah, I think that's actually going to be pretty good. And then I tell my wife and she says, yeah, that's a pretty cool idea. I tell one or two magician friends, yeah, that could be a pretty cool idea. As soon as that happens, I want it done 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait. And I already start thinking, okay, I want to do this on a TV show. What TV? And then I think, wait, Eric, it's not even built yet. But my impatience has been the best for me because I come up with an idea and not rushing it, but I try to put it together as fast as possible just to get a feel of will it work, will it not work? If the answer is yes, then I have lots of time to hone it, polish it, blah, blah, blah. And there are a lot of magicians, maybe with sleight of hand or with juggling, this is absolutely true. You're not going to go on stage if you can't juggle seven, or maybe you flashed seven once and that's the best you can do. You're not just going to go wing it. But my attitude is get something on stage as fast as possible to see if it's an original idea, to see if it will work in as a good a form as it can be. As long as you're not, you know, exposing the magic trick or boring the audience or anything like that, then you can always go, yes, this worked. Here's what I need to do now. And that impatience of mine has really fueled me. What you're going to see tonight is a 3 week old idea. And I have already sent footage out of me rehearsing at home to friends. And they're all kind of right behind me going, oh, my God, this could be really good. This, you know, here, try this. So tonight is the very first stage debut of this routine. It's a 3 week old idea. Now, again, it's still good props and I have a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
So it's not going to suck, I don't think, but it is very, very new.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be ready. And as soon as it was ready, I emailed Scott and said, I want to do Booby Trap ASAP.
Yeah.
So that's my impatience is cool. I think you should be impatient with yourself because, in a positive way, because so many people talk about doing things forever. Stop talking and go buy the trick, buy the spray paint you're going to do, write the jokes, do whatever you're going to do, and quit talking about it.
Yes, that's amazing.
Boom, mic drop.
Oh, as someone just...
or wrench drop.
And that's great. We'll probably just cut it right there. That's amazing. And just that sense of urgency. And, you know, that's my message of just go. It's like, stop, you know, as a people, what kind of microphone do you use to host a podcast or something? Like, who cares? Use your phone.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's like every big YouTube video has people commenting, what camera is it? What setting did you shoot in? Like, who cares?
Yeah,
like,
quit making excuses for yourself.
Coming up with reasons why you don't want to start it. So that sense of urgency is amazing. And And I love how that fit perfectly into you're doing it. You're living. You're not talking about it. You're living it. You're doing it. You came up with something.
Stay tuned to find out if the trick was good or not.
Well, maybe if it goes well, maybe I'll film it. And if it goes well, we'll put that as a bonus to the podcast episode.
We could do that.
See it happen. So that's it. Thank you.
Cool.
Where do you want to send people that want to, that now are intrigued about what you do?
Well, ericbuss.com, ericbuss.com. I'm on Facebook. I believe it's facebook.com/ericbussmagic. And then Twitter is @ericcbuss, the letter C for my middle name, Christopher, @ericcbuss. And website, that's it.
Cool. All right. Thank you.
Later.
That's the end of the show. Thank you for listening to the Between Dreams podcast. My name is Chris Ruggiero, and we're here for you. We got you. I know sometimes when you're working on new projects, you need a little help. You need some support. What are you working on? Let us know. Send me an email. It's ruggiero.christopher@gmail.com. Or if you're working on something and you want us to answer a question, or you have a question for guests that you'd like to hear specific things, you can ask them. You can call the number to the show. Again, no one's going to answer the phone, but you can leave a voicemail. That number is 213-373-1364. You can call that number. You can leave a voicemail, and we're not even going to call you back. You don't even have to worry about it. You can text message, but we will take those questions into account, and that'll help drive the direction of this show and also the direction of my YouTube work. And it's really great to hear what you guys like, what you don't like. If you have specific questions, again, you can call in at 213-373-1364, leave a voicemail or drop a text message to that number. Again, if you enjoyed this and you know someone else who would benefit from hearing this conversation, please do us a favor, send them a link, tell them, hey, check out the Between Dreams podcast. All they got to do is search Between Dreams on Spotify or iTunes or Google Play Music or iHeartRadio, whatever, wherever they listen to podcasts, type that in, they'll find it, they can subscribe and check out all the episodes, of course, always for free. So thank you guys very much for listening. Thanks to Eric Buss for joining the conversation and sharing his story. I'll see you later. Thank you. Goodbye.